Hello everybody and welcome back to another episode of The Synopsis. I am Zach and I will be your host as we go down the rabbit hole on this episode, episode 25. And we are going to be discussing a few things on today's episode. Our main story we will talk about is obviously in the title. We are going to discuss some cult, some Heaven Gate stuff, some Manson family stuff, and overall just some overall cults that people have heard of in the past. However, on recording this episode today is 9/11/2019, which obviously means it has been 18 years since the terrorist attacks in New York City on the World Trade Centers and also on the Pentagon on the same day. So we're going to talk a little bit about that in our This Time Online segment. So without further ado, let's get into remembering 18 years ago to this day and where exactly we all were when we heard that first plane hit the tower. Full disclosure before we get into the podcast, this is Future Zach talking. Upon editing and cropping the podcast together, I realized my audio dropped out at some points. I do apologize for that. However, I just did a 55 plus minute podcast without any takes, without any stops, so I can't exactly do the whole thing again. I do apologize for a couple of the outtakes or for bits where it seems I'm jumping from one part to another. Bear with me as we get the audio equipment fixed, but I do apologize for that nonetheless, guys. So, enjoy the podcast, enjoy everything about it, and let me know on the Twitter or on the Instagrams what you think and what we should do for our next episode. Thanks. Alright guys, so for our This Time Online, we are going to be discussing the whole entire effect that 9/11 had on America, on the world, and overall changing just everything and everything. So, for some of the younger listeners out there, you may have not been alive when 9/11/2001 happened. And that's kind of scary for me to think about that. A lot of you weren't alive during that time. Kind of like how we were with World War II, is that a lot of the World War II people are now deceased, no longer with us, there's only a handful of survivors left. And that's kind of crazy to think about, that such a big event in history can be narrowed down to a select few of people. So let me talk a little bit about 9/11, what happened, and the aftermath, and then we'll get into a little bit of some things that are trending on Twitter and Instagram. But we want to be remembering 9/11 as something. Obviously, it's a bad time, 3,000 people died, but we don't want to be dwelling on those people's lives. We want to be celebrating their lives, celebrating what they did in life and not letting those terrorists win. Our whole thing of the 9/11 attacks was to strike fear into the world, into America, and to allow people just to panic. Pure fear, that's what they wanted. So at 8:46 on Wednesday, and that is today, 18 years to the day, it was on a Wednesday. Time was exactly that. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, it was 8:46. Sorry, I'm all over the place right now, guys, because it's kind of hard to remember, but at the same time, I'm trying to remember my story about it. It was 8:46 a.m., and the first plane hit the North Tower, and it was kind of like a holy crap moment. Everyone thought that something was wrong. They didn't realize it was a terrorist attack at first. When 9/11 originally happened, the very first plane that hit the towers, people thought it was a mistake, that the pilot was flying too low, that it wasn't meant to happen, and it was just a tragedy, and it gained a lot of media attention. The whole thing was, and this is me remembering off the top of my head now, I didn't do any deep diving into this because it's just something that I'm just kind of going to glance over because I feel like I need to mention it, but at the same time I don't want it to be a podcast where it's just about that. I'm sure there's hundreds of podcasts out there this week about 9/11. So I remember this: the plane hit the tower and it was being reported on the news and everyone was like, oh my gosh, there's been this accident, the Twin Towers have been hit by a plane, a commercial airline, a 747, and this is a tragedy. It was a complete accident. The pilot didn't know what he was doing. And as this news was being reported, we saw the camera pan up and we saw the plane, the second plane, goes straight into the building again. Now it's two planes that had hit the Twin Towers. And this one was the one that made the towers collapse. And this is where 64 people died on impact from the commercial airlines. 3,000 people were killed overall, whether it be on the spot, people jumping out of windows because they would rather fall to their death instead of burning to death. There is an infamous photograph of the flying man, I believe it's called, of the man who jumped out of the towers of the buildings to rather take his chances and survive that than being burnt alive or having the tower collapse while he was on the top floor. We saw the second plane hit, and that's when everyone knew it was a terrorist attack. That's when everyone knew something was wrong. And like I said, people died from the impact. People died from complications and conditions that happened, whether it be like first responders who ended up passing away from cancer of the lungs or brain cancer or something like that that was caused from being in that toxic environment at that time. But this was also the time that everyone stood up and the world stood together and said, we need to do something about this. And this was definitely an American time where America stood up and was like, everything's getting put to the side. We need to worry about our country now. And obviously the aftermath of this is where we are today. TSA have much more strict rules. Flying on planes is very strict. There has been more attacks, the 7/7 bombings in England. They have the attack in France that was only a year or 2 years ago, where the guy drove his truck and ran over like 38 people just down near the Eiffel Tower. We have the terrorist attacks in the Netherlands, formerly known as Holland. There's been a lot of attacks over the years, but 9/11 was like the big attack where everyone really stood up and took notice. And for that to be 18 years ago, and I still can remember exactly where I was. I was at school, we was in our German class, and we was learning some German, and then we heard news that a second plane had hit the tower. And that's when the news was turned on. And that's when the replays were shown over and over and over again of that second plane hitting the tower. And it's crazy to think that that was so long ago, but that is something that lives in your memory forever. Now with the 7/7 bombings in England, I don't remember where I was. I remember knowing we were attacked. I remember feeling that anger, that just despair of not being able to help. I don't think I was in England, I think I was in America. I don't remember. But 9/11 I remember. And I know it's bad I don't remember the 7/7s, but I remember 9/11 because of how powerful and how impactful it was seeing that happen live. The 7/7, we knew we got bombed, we knew we were attacked, and we saw the aftermath. But with 9/11, seeing that plane go into the towers is something that you'll never get out of your mind. You'll never ever forget that. And there's a lot of people who go to war who say the first time that they ever killed a man is something they'll never forget that person's face. They'll never forget that moment. This is one of those moments. Because as a collective world, not only did we witness a tragedy in the plane hitting the tower and killing all those people, but we saw those people's lives end like that. And that's crazy to think about. So today is the 18th anniversary of 9/11, and just take a moment to tell someone you appreciate them or say that you love them. Remember those who sacrificed their lives to help those in 9/11. Remember those families who have been affected by it. We were all affected by it, but more families than others. And just really show your gratitude and your appreciation to your family right now. Wherever you are, pause the podcast. Go show someone appreciation. Go tell them you love them. Go give them a hug, a kiss, whatever it may be. Go give them some reason to be happy to be here today. Because I know there's 3,000 plus people whose families would love for that one moment to be able to tell them their appreciation again. With that being said, guys, the 9/11 portion of this podcast is over. We're going to go into this time online. We're going to talk about a few things, and then we're going to get into the main part of our podcast today, the Heaven's Gate, Manson family, and all of that. So, I hope you enjoy this episode. And even if this is only the part you want to listen to because of the whole topic of what we're discussing, that's fine. But show somebody today that you care. We'll be right back, right after this quick break. Okay guys, so obviously this time online there is a lot of talk about what we just discussed with the September the 11th attacks, but let's try and find some other things online today that we can talk about, and one of them is vaping. Trump's administration has moved a ban to completely ban flavored e-cigarettes amid recent results that vaping related deaths have happened. Now, somebody just recently died of another vaping attempt. This was 6th person now who has died from vaping. And it's kind of a big deal right now in the States because vaping's always been a hot topic issue. If it's legal, if it's not legal, if it's, you know, tobacco or whatever it may be. So it's definitely one of those things that his administration should definitely be looking into. Maybe not banning it completely because, you know what, they haven't banned alcohol, they haven't banned cigarettes. But that's obviously something they make a lot of money off of. So, who knows, maybe they will, you know, limit tobacco and alcohol like they did with age and maybe change vaping to 21 or something like that. So, I don't know, it's one of those things. I'm looking through Twitter right now and I'm looking through Instagram right now to see if there's anything really trending apart from the obvious. Chris Smith is trending. Unfortunately, his girlfriend has passed away in a car accident. Team USA is trending because the World Cup is over after they lost to France in FIBA. Tifa is trending because of Final Fantasy VII. People are amazed at the quote-unquote glow-ups that the characters have had. And that is one of the big things really happening online today. There isn't a lot going on, especially with the day being the day that it is that I am recording this episode on the 11th. Nothing is really going to be out there apart from the attacks. And it's a sad situation that we see. And not because like we're remembering the attacks and all that, but it's because we need to try and continue with our lives. Yes, we need to remember, but we need to also try and continue. And that may be controversial, and that's okay. I don't want to be controversial, I don't want drama, I don't want any of that stuff. So I can talk about trending online. There is nothing trending apart from the attacks. So I guess this time online is going to be pretty shitty, huh guys? Maybe there's something that else we can talk about. Nope. Ed Helms' wife responded to rumored Demi Moore affair in an unexpected way. Nothing real major there. Johnny Cash's daughter's talking about some shit. There really is nothing else trending. So this is a terrible this time online. There has been some drama in the YouTube community, but when isn't there? A couple of shots have been fired around at each other. So, you know, nothing really out of the ordinary there. Morgs tried to expose Rice Gum. There was a bunch of other crap that happened. I'm really just kind of rambling right now because I don't see anything else trending. So, I guess that's cue for us to get into the main topic of today's podcast, which is going to be Heaven's Gate, the Manson family, and many, many more. So, let's talk about Heaven's Gate, the UFO religious millennium cult based in San Diego, Cali, in 1974, it was founded, and we shall continue. You know what? Let's just go straight into it. Why not? So, Heaven's Gate was founded by Marshall Applewhite Jr., who was also known as Du. He was the leader of Heaven's Gate. And Heaven's Gate, if you haven't heard, because this was a thing that happened in 1997, so a lot of these people who are born right now don't know about Heaven's Gate or cults back in the day. So, from March 24th to the 27th, 39 followers of Heaven's Gate died in a mass suicide in Santa Fe, California, which is basically a border of San Diego to the north hand side. These people believed that They were exiting their human vessels as taught by Marshall, and they could go, their souls could go on a journey aboard a spaceship which they believed to be following Comet Halebop. Some male members of the group underwent voluntary castration in preparation for genderless life. They believed that it was going to be happening after they killed themselves, they were going to be genderless, and everyone was just being treated as equal. In the May of 1997, two Heaven Gate members who had not been present for the mass suicide attempted to kill themselves. One succeeded, the other became comatose for 2 days and then finally recovered. His name was Chuck Humphrey, and in 1998, in February, he also committed suicide, successfully this time, to try and join the Heaven's Gate crew. So, that's a little bit of background of it. Now, Comet Halebop is a comet that had been seen. It's one of the brightest comets. It's been there for many decades. Discovered in 1995, and it's still going today. They last saw it April 1st, 1997, and it has disappeared since then. But this comet was what Marshall Applewhite believed was the next saving grace, the saving thing. So, the scary thing about Heaven's Gate is that Heaven's Gate's website is still active and it's still online for people to see. Now, pre-1997 there was 41 members, and post-97 there was 2. Now, the 2 members obviously are the ones who eventually committed suicide, and the other 41, you know, it was 39 of them who tried to commit, who did the mass suicide. So the 2 who weren't there ended up joining the other members. So Marshall Applewhite basically believed he was a prophet. He thought he was a prophet from the early 70s. He was fired from the University of St. Thomas in Houston, Texas, and it was alleged that he was having a relationship with one of his male students. Obviously, that wasn't going around. A lot of rumors were going around. He was not happy about that. He was rumored to be in a psychiatric hospital, but, you know, that was never proven. He recalled that he felt like he had known people for a long time and concluded that they had all met in a person in the past, in some personal way in a past life. He had been told by a woman whose name goes Bonnie Nettles. Bonnie Nettles was also known as T. So you had Do and T. Dottie, if you will. She basically said that she was told by extraterrestrials. So she was said that they told him that they were going to have a meeting and it was going to be a divine assignment and everything was going to be fantastic. And then Marshall was like, yes, I feel like I know you from another life, from a past life. It was obviously meant to be. We should all be together. And this is what caused Heaven's Gate. Applewhite and Nettles tried to contact the extraterrestrials, the aliens. And while they were trying to do that, they tried to find people who thought like them. So basically crazy recruiting crazy right now. They recruited their disciples, which they called the crew. And their disciples were basically there to represent beings from another planet, the next level. They sought people to try and do the experiment with, and they wanted to try and eventually do this mass suicide, because they believed their souls would go onto this comet, and this comet would take them to the next life, the next afterlife, where they all would be genderless and they all would live happily. And this was the sign from divine intervention. And because he was such a biblical professor, or a prophet, I should say, a biblical prophet, that's the correct word I'm looking for, that all of this was right and everything was going to be great. So he told all of his crew, or his followers, that they had a simultaneous revelation that they were going to be the 2 witnesses written into the Bible, story end of time. And in 1975, he told all of his members to come together and sell all their worldly possessions and to say goodbye to their loved ones. Their group vanished from their hotel and completely from the public eye. And it was even on CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite that the group had disappeared, and it was the first national report of the developing religious group, and a bunch of people had disappeared was on the news. It was like, okay, this group was here one day and people were like, okay, they're a little bit crazy, but they're not doing anything stupid yet. They're just selling their stuff, which is dumb enough. But now they've completely disappeared. And this started to, you know, obviously make people scared. The reality of the situation is because the crew had told their friends and family who they're saying goodbye to, they were going on a trip to eternity. The reality is that Applewhite and Nettles, who were known as Doe and T, like I said, Doty, that was their new names after they decided that was going to be their genderless names, that they had led nearly all 100 members of the crew across the country. They slept in tents, sleeping bags, and even begged on the streets, evading detection by authorities and media. It helped the group focus doctrine of helping members of the crew achieve a higher evolutionary level above human, which they themselves had already claimed to reach. So, over the years, Applewhite and Nettles had different aliases. Bo and Peep were two of them, like Little Bo Peep. And they also were known as Him, the Human Individual Metamorphosis, that's what they called them. They called themselves the Evolutionary Kingdom level above human. And they were overall basically... My dog is sneezing by the sounds of it, or throwing up, one or the other. I will have to check on that real quick. Okay, false alarm, just sneezing. As I was saying, they were basically saying, you know, they were the next thing to become of humans. They were the next evolution. And they were recruiting people to become the next evolution of them. A lot of people, it was kind of crazy because... A lot of them said, like, the crew were hippies, recruited from different religions and stuff like that. But one of the early recruits was John Craig, who was a Republican running for Colorado's House of Representatives. And he joined in 1975, too. And the clan of UFO followers all seemed to have a common need for communal belonging in an alternate path to higher existence without the constraints of institutionalized faith. That is a quote there. Just so you know, I read that as a quote. So they all believed that they had no personal gain in this world, that they all had to be together, they all only lived because of each other, and that was how it became a thing. In 1985, Nettles died, and Applewhite revised the group's doctrines of the crew to gain an eventual reputation as a cyberculture to the religious throughout. Rumors began spreading around the group for following years that the upcoming comet Hale-Bopp housed the secret to their ultimate salvation and ascended into the kingdom of heaven. And this is where the comet becomes a big thing, is that now they were believing that this comet was where they were going to end up when they did this mass suicide, and that was going to be their salvation, that they wouldn't actually die. This comet would save their life, and they would be on the comet, and they would ride it to the next kingdom, which was out in the solar system, somewhere beyond the human eye. And this was going on for 20 plus years now. Right, so we're 22 years into this, and Heaven's Gate is still active. That's the thing, the website's still active. It was never taken down. If you look at the website, it's heavensgate.com. all of this is basically what Doe and T were preaching to their followers for years and years, and it's basically the ramblings of a dead man and how he basically showed the world how he planned on killing himself and all of his followers. So, in October 1996, people started renting a home, and they called it the Monastery. It was a 9,200 square feet mansion located in Paso, Victoria, a gated community. They paid $7,000 a month in cash to rent this place out. And the group purchased alien abduction insurance that would cover up to 50 members and would pay out $1 million per person if they were accidentally covered by abduction, if they were abducted, impregnated, or died by aliens. That was actually a thing. They actually did alien abduction insurance. That is kind of crazy, right? So, fast forward to March 19th, 97. Marshall taped himself in Doe's final exit. He was speaking of mass suicide and asserted it was the only way to evacuate this Earth. After asserting that there was a spacecraft was trailing the comet Hale-Bopp and it would get them closest to Heaven Gate, he persuaded 38 followers of the monastery to prepare for a ritual suicide so that their souls could board the supposed aircraft, and he believed in their deaths, the UFO would take their souls to another level of existence above human, and he described that as being physical and spiritual, and preparations were to be made. And these included each member of the crew, as you call them, videotaping farewell messages for themselves, farewell messages for their family, and overall just basically saying this is going to be the end. So, talking about the actual suicide itself, they took a phenobarbital, which was mixed with applesauce and pudding, and it was washed down with vodka. Now, a phenobarb is a medication that treats seizures in young children. So it's basically an anti-seizure medication. They additionally secured plastic bags around their heads after ingesting the mix to induce asphyxiation. Asphyxiation is a lack of oxygen going to the brain, and eventually it shuts your brain down too, to the lack of no oxygen, obviously. You may have heard of asphyxiation with the autoerotic asphyxiation, where people choke themselves while they get off. That's probably where the most famous asphyxiation is. 39 of them, all of them who died, were dressed in identical black shirts and sweatpants, brand new black and white Nike Decades athletic shoes, and armband patches reading Heaven's Gate Away Team. And people were saying that was a group's use of the Star Trek fictional universe, and it was one of the many, many instances that they would use Star Trek as a reference in their clan. Each member had on them $5 bill and $3 in their pockets. The $5 bill was to cover vagrancy fines while members were out on jobs, while the quarters were to make phone calls. So it makes sense that every single one of them had $5 and they had $3. Once they were all dead, a living member would arrange the body by removing the plastic bag from the person's head. Then they posed the body so it laid neatly in their own bed with faces, torsos, and covered by a purple square cloth. 21 women and 18 men between the ages of 26 and 72 are believed to have died in three groups over three successive days, with remaining participants cleaning up after each prior group's death. The suicides occurred in groups of 15 or 15 and 9 between the days of 22nd and the 26th of March. Among the dead were Thomas Nichols, who was the brother of actress Nicole Nichols, who was best known for her role in Star Trek. And again, you know, Heaven's Gate used to Star Trek, has a lot of references in their cult. Definitely would be helpful if they had somebody who was a brother of the actress from Star Trek in their group. Marshall Applewhite was the third to last member to die. Two people remained after him and were the only ones who would be found with bags over their heads and not having purple cloths covering up their top halves. Before the last suicides, similar sets of FedEx packages were sent to numerous Heaven Gates affiliated individuals, and at least one media outlet, the BBC department, responded for Lou Theroux's Weird Weekends, of which Heaven Gate had declined participation. So they prepped themselves, they had everything in order, and they said the last two people who wanted to commit suicide, you're not going to have the way we have, but you'll be joining us on this comet to the afterlife of greatness. Now, the San Diego Sheriff's Department received an anonymous tip on 3:15 p.m. on the 26th of March, suggesting they check on the welfare of residents. Day after the suicide, this caller was revealed to be D'Angelo. D'Angelo, his first name is Rio, was a recipient of a package that he received on March 25th. It contained two VHS tapes, one which had Doe's final exit, which was the death video of Marshall, and the other was farewell messages of group followers. It contained a letter stating that, among other things, we have exited our vehicles just as we entered them. Upon informing his boss of the information that he received and the packages he received a ride to Heaven's Gate in Santa Fe so he can verify the letter. He found the back door purposely left unlocked to allow access and used a video camera to record what he found. After leaving the house, D'Angelo's boss, who had waited outside, encouraged him to call the authorities, alerting them to his discovery, which is what happened on the 26th of March, 3:15 p.m. This is a little bit of, it was literally a three sentence 911 call, and this is what it says. Rio D'Angelo says, "Yes, I need to report an anonymous tip. Who do I talk to? Sheriff's Department. Okay, this is regarding what? Caller. This is regarding the mass suicide, and I can give you the address." And the person who took the call was a deputy. He went over to the Heaven's Gate Ranch. He wore a surgical mask and entered the home through a sliding door. He found 10 bodies and was nearly overcome by a pungent odor. Obviously, in California, it's very hot. Decomposition is probably going to happen after the 3 days, just of how hot it is, and it's going to help bacteria growth. And obviously, the smell is going to be there for a while. It's not going to be a good time. Deputy called for backup. They searched the home. They found nobody alive. They retrieved a retreated until a search warrant could be procured, and all 39 bodies were ultimately cremated. Now, it's kind of crazy to me that they still needed to get a search warrant to actually be able to find the rest of these bodies, because it wasn't technically anyone's property apart from that of Marshall's and Heaven's Gate. So even though that there is no one alive on the premises, they still had to secure a search warrant, which is crazy to me. After the news broke of the suicides and the relation to Hale-Bopp, which was the comet, the co-discoverer of the comet, who was Alan Hale, hence the name Hale-Bopp, was drawn into the story. His phone never stopped ringing the entire day, and he didn't respond until the next day, where he spoke on a press conference saying that we are probably going to have some suicides as a result of the comet. The sad part is that I was not surprised. Comets are lovely objects, but they don't have apocalyptic significance. We must use our minds and our reasons. So he was basically saying, yes, comets are amazing, but at the same time, it's not going to take you anywhere. It was kind of crazy that happened. It really was. Three former members of Heaven Gate committed suicide themselves in the months after the mass suicide. Wayne Cook and Charlie Humphreys tried to kill themselves in a hotel similar to the way the group had. Cook died, Humphreys survived, and then Humphreys ended up shooting himself. He killed himself in Arizona in 98. And James Perkey Jr. committed suicide with a self-inflicted gunshot wound on May 11th. There's been two members that maintain the group website, although it's never been altered since the suicide event. The two do not identify themselves in interviews. So there are two members left of Heaven's Gate, and they're the reason this website is still up and active. And they are still refusing to say who they are. They want to be left out of the limelight, but to think that there's only two people still left that is keeping this website up and running. If they didn't believe what Heaven's Gate was about, or even the mass suicides that happened and the result of nothing happening, they wouldn't have kept the website active. They still have it active, which means to me that they're still out there probably trying to recruit somebody, or they're still trying to get the word of Marshall Applewhite at the time around the world. And I don't understand it. I really don't. So in 2018, Lil Uzi Vert posted the cover art for his upcoming studio album, Eternal, A Take, on his Instagram. The artwork incorporated a reworking of the Heaven Gate keyhole logo. The two survivors of the group threatened Lil Uzi Vert, who at the time used a picture of Marshall Applewhite as his Instagram avatar, with copyright infringement litigation. I don't think a lot came to that. There was never really a lawsuit or anything like that. I'm pretty sure that Vert just said, oh, I'm just going to change shit. Done. It is what it is. But it is kind of crazy that even these two people, who are the last surviving members of Heaven's Gate, threatened to sue him for basically using Applewhite's name in vain, almost. And even after the mass suicide, and even after the proof that the comet just went on by and life continued, they're still out there trying to preach Applewhite's belief system. And his belief system, avid listener, is that they believe the planet Earth would be recycled before 2027. So we've got 8 more years. The only chance for them to be consciousness as soul or mind would be to leave in their human bodies at an appointed time. And this appointed time was 1997. They said they would be transported, their bodies onto the spacecraft, obviously to take them to heaven. When Nettles died of cancer in 1985, it confounded Applewhite's doctrine because Nettles was allegedly chosen by the next level to be a messenger on Earth, yet her body died instead of leaving physically to outer space. The belief system was then refined to include the leaving of consciousness from the body as equivalent to leaving the Earth in a spacecraft. So, what we get from there is that originally the belief system is that a UFO would have come down, taken all of these people away with them, that they could board a spacecraft and it would take them on the comet to a new world, to the new heaven, quote unquote. But after Bonnie Nettles died, T, for those who wasn't paying attention earlier, Doe and T, remember, she died of cancer, and this made Marshall go, well, fuck, maybe she wasn't the prophet, the end all be all, that I believe she was. Let me change the belief system to consciousness, so that just because the body dies, it doesn't mean the consciousness and the spirit and the soul does. Therefore, we're good. We can have the belief system continue. You changed something pretty drastic there in Heaven's Gate, where you said, from boarding a UFO to losing consciousness. That's a big change there, guys. And how members and followers were like, hold on a second, this doesn't seem right. I will never know. And I don't ever plan on knowing. Don't sue me, the last two members of Heaven's Gate. If you end up listening to this somehow, please don't sue me, please. I beg of you. The group was against suicide, and they said that was context to turn against the next level when it's being offered, and believe that human bodies were only vessels meant to help them on their journey. Suicide, therefore, would not be allowing their consciousness to leave their human bodies to join the next level. Remaining alive instead of participating in the group's suicide was considered suicide of their consciousness. In conversation, when referring to a person or a person's body, they routinely used the word vehicle. So they were saying that basically, when we do this mass suicide, it's to save us and our consciousness from the drastic debacle of the human body and everything that it includes, you know? So they were basically saying, okay, this is what we're doing, and this is it. This is our suicide pact. If we stay alive, you're killing your consciousness, you're not killing yourself. So that was Heaven's Gate's philosophy. So that's one cult there that really is kind of crazy. Now, if we want to talk about another crazy-ass cult, let's talk about the most infamous cult, obviously apart from the KKK and the Black Panthers and stuff, but the most infamous serial cult, which was the Manson family. And the Manson family was active in California in the late 1960s, and obviously his leader was Charles Manson, and it was around 100 people who followed, and he lived his unconditional lifestyle with habitual use of hallucinogenic drugs. That's right, I said habitual use of hallucinogenic drugs, LSD, ecstasy, weed. Okay, is weed hallucinogenic? I guess marijuana can be hallucinogenic. Meth, cocaine, all these things, hallucinogenic drugs. And it was something that Manson and his family, as they were called, did on a regular basis and were completely drawn in by Manson's teachings and his hippie culture, his communal living, his carefree lifestyle, and eventually his murders of multiple women, one including Sharon Tate. And he was never charged with the murders, but with basically inciting the murders. The murders were actually committed by Tex Watson, Susan Atkins, and Patricia Kremwinkle. Lyndia Kasabian was present but did not take part, she said. But in the end, Charles Manson was the one who told them to kill. He believed he was the manifestation of Jesus Christ, and all of his prophecies were reliable concerning an imminent apocalyptic race war. Manson family. Let's get right into it. on the synopsis. Manson family started off in San Francisco. In 1967, he received permission to move to San Francisco, him obviously being Charles Manson. With the help of a prison acquaintance, he moved into an apartment in Berkeley. And this basically is the start of the Manson family. He learned how to play the steel guitar in prison. Bank robber Alvin Karpis had actually taught him, so he had learned how to play the guitar. Once he came out of prison, he would use that skill to start begging, to start performing on the streets to get a little bit of money. Manson soon got to know Mary Brunner, who was a 23-year-old graduate of Wisconsin Madison. Now, the name Mary Brunner may sound familiar to you, and if it does sound familiar, that's because she was the original member of the Manson family. She had a PhD, she was a California musician. She had a lot of arrests when she was charged. She was arrested for numerous offenses, from credit card theft to armed robbery, and then ended up serving all this time in jail and was paroled in 1977 after the Manson stuff. She met Charles Manson after graduating. She met him when he was 33 years old. He had been released from Terminal Island prison several weeks earlier, and she let him stay in her apartment, and the two became lovers after several weeks, which effectively made her the first person, like I said, that Manson had recruited to his family. She quit her job and began drifting around California in a van, meeting other young women. Charles Manson impregnated her in 1967, and she gave birth to a son in 1968, who she named Valentine Michael, nicknamed Pooh Bear. They lived in a condemned house in Topanga Canyon, and she assisted during birth by a couple of other women from the family. She acquired a number of aliases over the years and nicknames, including Mariochi, Och, Mother Mary, Mary Manson, Linda D. Manson, and Christine Marie Ooks. But enough about her for now. That was a little bit of Mary Brunner. So Manson established himself as somewhat of a guru in San Francisco's Haight Ashbury district in 67, Summer of Love. He was emerging as a signature hippie local. He had borrowed his philosophy from the Church of the Final Judgment, who believed Satan would become reconciled to Christ and they would come together at the end of the world to judge humanity. Manson soon had the first of his group of followers, which he called the Manson family. Most of them were female, and most of them were reincarnations of original Christians or Romans that were already established. He strongly implied that he was Christ, even envisioning himself as a story on the cross with nails in his feet and hands. In 1967, he began using the alias Charles Wills Manson. It is often said it very slowly, Charles Will is man's son, implying that his will was the same as that of the son of man. Now, if you've watched Mindhunter, you will know the son of man is a phrase from the Hebrew Bible and various apocalyptic works. The son of man is the Hebrew expression that is in the book of Ezekiel, and it was based on what Manson really based his whole thing, his whole family on. Christian theology reads as an allusion to the divine Christian Messiah, and that's what the Son of Man is supposed to be, and that's what Manson would refer to himself of. And my name is Charles Manson, Son of Man. Makes sense, right? But as we learn in the future, that is not exactly how it went down. Manson had a very good presentation of himself. He was always presented as the nice guy when he was met to people. He was a strong-willed individual, and he had a very unique way with words. A lot of people said that over the years. There were a number of women who ended up doubling in Dennis Wilson's house. Dennis Wilson was of the Beach Boys fame. And he got involved with Manson a little bit in 1968. He told me he had a guru. The guy was called Charlie. The couple of women that he knew, Patricia Cranewinkle, was a family member. And after they said he had a guru, there was a guru, they was like, all right, cool, let's bring him in, we can chill. Women were in Wilson's house over the next few months. They cost him $100,000 by making themselves part of his household. A large medical bill was treatment for gonorrhea and $21,000 for the destruction of an uninsured card which they borrowed. Wilson would sing and talk with Charles Manson while the women were treated as servants to them both. Wilson paid for studio time to record songs written and performed by Manson and introduced him to entertainment business acquaintances, which were Greg Jacobson, Terry Melcher. They owned a house with Rudy Altobelli and rented to actress Sharon Tate and her husband Roman Polanski. And if Sharon Tate sounds familiar, it should, because Sharon Tate was murdered in 1969, and she was murdered by members of the Manson family in the home she shared with her husband. At the time of her death, she was 8.5 months pregnant with their son. She has been told that she was begging the family, the Manson family that is, to leave her, let her have birth to her son, and then they can kill her. She doesn't care, but let her have her son first. There was Polinsky, who was murdered as well. Let me look here if I double check that was right. Taylor, the final day, returned. Police took on your survivor's address, the property caretakers, the Manson family bodies were discovered in the morning by the caretaker Winifred Chapman. Police arrived to the scene to find the body of a young man who was identified as Stephen Parent, shot dead in his car in the driveway. Inside the house were the bodies of Tate and Sebring, were found in the living room, a long rope tied each around their necks connecting them. On the front lawn were the bodies of Frakowski and Folger. All the victims except Parent had been stabbed numerous times. The coroner's report for Tate noted that she'd been stabbed 16 times, and that 5 of the wounds were in and of themselves fatal. So she was stabbed 16 times, and 5 of them would have been what killed her, and the rest were just craziness. The Manson family were arrested on unrelated charges and eventually were charged of the Tate Polanski house, and it was eventually demolished. And it was just a crazy time. Sharon Tate, very, very popular in her time, in film debut from 1961 until her death in 69. And like I said, very popular individual. She was a very attractive woman, and it was just one of these things where Manson had such a control over his followers, his family, or whatever they wanted to be called, that he could literally get them to do anything and everything he wanted to. And that is how we are going to move on to the Helter Skelter. Now, in the first days of November, the Helter Skelter scenario was a theory that has been put forward now by Vincent Boglisio, who was the lead prosecutor in the murder trials of Tate and LaBanca. And it explained in a series of murders committed by the Manson family, he described his theory at trial and in his book Helter Skelter, The True Story of the Manson Murders. Charles Manson often spoke to members of his family about Helter Skelter leading up to months of the murders, which involved Sharon Tate and Leno and Rosemary LaBianca. In August 1969, an apocalyptic war arising from racial tensions between blacks and whites. Basically, Manson's whole theory in his sick sadistic head is that Helter Skelter was going to be the uprise of whites against blacks, and the race war would happen. And this was his basic idea of how he's going to cleanse the world, and the Helter Skelter scenario was born. Now, people can't confirm it was the motive behind murders, but a lot of people have definitely said it could be a possibility. It's a still at large fact whether Helter Skelter was a thing. It was marked down in blood on a couple of the murder sites, same with Pigman, stuff like that, where it was like trying to give the idea that it was a race war beginning. And this has been explained a lot in the Mindhunter series on Netflix. If you haven't checked it out, definitely check it out. But Manson's whole goal was to start a race war to justify what he was going to do. And it would give him a reason to kill people and do his murders and all that stuff. And that was one of those things that he tried to do, was the Helter Skelter theory. Now, we're moving back to Miss Sharon Tate real quick. And it was noted that Tate asked Altobelli, who was the main prosecutor in the future, if that creepy guy, that creepy looking guy had gone back to the guest house the day before, if he was traveling with him when there was going on a trip. And that kind of pissed off Manson, because he overheard that that was being said, and he got mad, and then that caused jealousy. He told the women followers, and then here we are now talking about it. It all comes around. Unfortunately, it all comes around. Now, I will tell you this, while I'm doing investigation and research on all of these things, it's absolutely baffling about how much he got away with, like, training these women, training the family, and the overall aftermath isn't until, like, 1970 onwards. And he still, even though he died of a heart attack in 2017, at the age of 83, it's still being talked about to this day. There's still investigations going on. There was investigations in 2008 of Discovery Channel's Most Evil, saying that she was trying to keep people from killing the family. Ruth Ann Morehouse was in Hawaii to testify at Manson's trial. Forensic investigators conducted a search on human remains at the Barker Ranch for previous months where the family had killed hitchhikers and runaways. 2009, the History Channel broadcasted a docudrama covering the family's activities and murders, and they spoke with Linda Kasabian, who spoke publicly for the first time since 1989. They did another one on the History Channel where Deborah Tate, who was the sister of Sharon, was interviewed, and they did a program, an interview with Vincent Boglioso and Catherine Scher. The 40th anniversary of the murders approached in 2009. LA Times magazine published an oral history in which former families, members, law enforcement officers, and others involved with Manson recollected their observations and everything that he did. And saying Charles Manson got away with everything, people will say he's in jail, but Charlie is exactly where he wants to be. And this is true. Charles Manson was notoriously known in jail for running his family still while being locked up. He would have these women visit him on a regular basis. He would talk to them. He would have phone conversation with them, write letters to them, and he would still be controlling the family and what they did while he was in jail. This was the hold that Manson had over the family at that time. People believed his word. They believed he was gospel. He was a guru. He was a messiah. Everyone believed that. And Charlie, as he was known in jail and by the family, is one of those who made people believe it. And it's crazy to me that even in jail, he could still have that much power over an individual. He could still have that much fear strike into that individual's heart that they wouldn't do anything about it. They wouldn't touch him. They wouldn't go near him. They wouldn't even testify against him. They were just like, no, we're not fucking with it. You know, we know what's going on here. We're not messing about with it. They would just do whatever he said without questioning it and just accept that his word is gospel. And to have that power over a family, over a unit, over people, from being inside a jail cell, and he would preach about that day in, day out. He would lie about his accomplishments to anyone who would listen. He was so talkative to try and keep his name up there in the ranks of notoriousness, to be the most notorious murderer, killer, cult leader, whatever you want to call it, in the history of the world. He would do whatever it took, and he had so much power over that family, over those members, that they genuinely believed that he was the next reincarnation of Jesus, that he was the man that they had to go through to get anything in their life. He held that power until his death in 2017, where he was 83 and died of a heart attack and complications with colon cancer. So the Manson family was definitely a family that was a batshit crazy. They were responsible for think, a total of 5 murders, the most infamous one obviously being that of Sharon Tate, unfortunately, and her husband has to live with that, knowing that Manson was the one who killed her. He organized the attack, he did all of that, and Polanski obviously threatened Manson many a times. Nothing ever came of it, obviously. Manson lived a long life in jail. He had a neo-Nazi, or Nazi swastika, tattooed on his forehead just to really show the race wars. He used the N-word a lot. The whole entire thing of the Manson family was a big racist cult at the end of the day. And, you know, the world's a better place without him, honestly. So the Manson family is another cult that we have dove into on the rabbit hole today in the synopsis. Let's get into our last part of our podcast today. I know it's been a short one again, probably, guys, but like I said, I'm struggling to find stuff. But last part of the podcast, it's a Friday. You know what that means. It's song lyric reading time. So we are going to be reading in one of our songs. You will find out what it is right after this. We're not doing commercial breaks today, obviously, because of the 9/11 stuff. We're not going to do any commercial breaks. And we lost our sponsorship with a couple of people. I'm not sure why. Okay, let's just do it. We lost our sponsorship of Anchor. I'm going to call Anchor out for this. I'm not sure why. You were with us for 2 months and then you said, no, we're done, we're pulling the plug. There's nothing wrong with the podcast. We've been doing family-friendly content for most of the time. And all of our stuff is being by the book. Anchor just decided they didn't want to sponsor us anymore. So, you know what? Whatever, Anchor, good for you. Do your thing. I'm still going to use the app. Don't get me wrong, but someone who is sponsoring us is the guys and gals at ethics.com. That's ethcs.com. If you are looking for some used or reusable products, then go to ethics.com. They have their trade and rebuy sale going on right now, where you can trade in your old clothing, which they can then remake into ethic products, and then you get a discount on new clothing you buy from them. Or if your clothing's worth enough, they'll give you their stuff for free. Check them out. They're reusable totes, have been created using fibers that was left on their warehouse floors. Great vegan product, animal free, cruelty free. Go check them out, ethics.com. Again, that's ethcs.com. Go check them out. Tell them the synopsis sent you, and let's get into our song lyrics, our final piece on Friday's podcast. Alright guys, final part of the podcast. We are in for a doozy today, and I'm going to see if you can guess the song before excuse me, I announce it. Let's get right into it. Mind right, money rye. Enjoy yourself tonight. I lost my phone, and I'm about to lose my voice tonight. I say I should be your choice tonight. I said I should be your choice tonight. Mind right, money right. Enjoy yourself tonight. I lost my phone, and I'm about to lose my voice tonight. I say I should be your choice tonight. I should be your choice tonight. Aru demwa we saran siago we. Nure ni yo he guaya we baro ni yo he. Aru yango da weo sarangi siolo we. Gule we ni yo he gule we bara ni yo he. Jigeren bueto kau ongulieto. Dekai ajai. Gaboka, op, opung Gangnam Style. Gold chain, Magnum Style, my homies gangbang Gangnam Style. My money long like beach towels, they judging me but I ain't on trial. I'm a hot boy, you barely miles, my flow hard like it's around. I take her down till she tap out, sorry I'm gonna call you Mrs. Charles. I speak that Guapanese, we lighten up that broccoli. I play with money, that's monopoly, I don't believe in monogamy. Motherfucking, I'm star, I'ma need my spaces. Made $500,000 today, ain't got no time for fucking haters. Chorus is, you sexy and you know it, clap your hands, drink some Moet. Balling so hard, but we don't need no refs. I took the elevator and used no steps. You think you're sexy, baby, put your hands high. I'm the bomb, baby, landmine. And I'm shopping like in my spare time. You sexy and you know it, clap your hands, drink some Moet. You sexy and you know it, drink some Moet. A sexy lady, up on Gangnam Style. That was Gangnam Style by Psy. Hashtag Korean and English mixture there. So, crazy song lyric to end the day. I'm not sure what the hell I was reading. I don't speak Korean. Like I said, I know some Japanese. I can hold a conversation. I'm pretty fluent. But Korean is not my strong point. So if it isn't Japanese, then it ain't for me. With that being said, guys, I do appreciate you listening to the synopsis. And we are still on the Anchor app, on Spotify, on Apple Tunes, on Google Podcasts, or anywhere you can get your podcast available. Give us a like, give us a follow, share us with your friends on social media. We are at The Synopsis Post on both Instagram and the Twitters, as Jericho would say. So sit back and enjoy the rest of your weekend. Maybe have a little bit of bubbly, and you can enjoy the rest of your weekend not worrying about the synopsis. We'll be back on Monday. Guys, thank you again. Like I said, I love you all. And we will see you next episode. Episode 26 coming up of the synopsis. Goodbye.